Ladies and gentlemen, this conference was called by Lord Bertrand Russell in order to make public a statement signed by a number of scientists on the significance of nuclear warfare. I hope that each of you has received a copy of the statement. I'm going to call on Lord Russell to give a short summary of this statement, and afterwards the meeting will be thrown open to you to ask questions relating to this problem. Lord Russell.
Ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of this conference is to bring to your notice, and through you to the notice of the world, a statement signed by 8 of the most eminent scientists in fields cognate nuclear warfare about the perils that are involved in nuclear warfare and the absolute necessity, therefore, of avoiding war. I will just read you a brief abstract here, which I think you already have. The accompanying statement, which has been signed by some of the most eminent scientific authorities in different parts of the world, deals with the perils of a nuclear war. It makes it clear that neither side can hope for victory in such a war, and that there is a very real danger of the extermination of the human race by dust and rain from radioactive clouds. It suggests that neither the public nor the governments of the world are adequately aware of the danger. It points out that an agreed prohibition of nuclear weapons, while it might be useful in lessening tension, would not afford a solution, since such weapons would certainly be manufactured and used in a great war in spite of previous agreements to the contrary. The only hope for mankind is the avoidance of war. To call for a way of thinking which shall make such avoidance possible is the purpose of this statement. The first move came as a collaboration between Einstein and myself. Einstein's signature was given in the last week of his life. Since his death, I have approached men of scientific competence, both in the East and in the West, for political disagreements should not influence men of science in estimating what is probable. But some of those approached have not yet replied. I am bringing the warning pronounced by the signatories to the notice of all the powerful governments of the world in the earnest hope that they may agree to allow their citizens to survive. Now, I should like to say just a little about the genesis of this statement. I think it was an outcome of a broadcast which I gave on the 23rd of December last year on the BBC on the peril of nuclear war. I had appreciative letters from various people, among others from Professor Joliot Curie, the eminent French man of science, and I was particularly pleased at getting an appreciative letter from him because of his being a noted communist. I thought that one of the purposes that I had in view was to build a bridge between people of opposing political opinions, that is to say, to unite men of science on a statement of facts which would leave out altogether what people thought in the matter of politics. I wrote to Einstein suggesting that eminent men of science should do something dramatic about nuclear war, and I got a reply from him saying that he agreed with every word. I therefore drew up a draft after consultation with a certain number of people, which I sent to Einstein, and he, being already not in very good health, suggested, I quote his own phrase, that I should regard myself as dictator of the enterprise, because I think chiefly because his health was not equal to doing it. When I sent him the draft, he replied, "I am gladly willing to sign your excellent statement." I received this letter on the very day of his death, and after I had received news of his death. So that this was, I suppose, about the very last public act of his life. The aims of drawing up the statement were to keep to what men of science as such can pronounce upon, to avoid politics, and thus to get signatures both from the right and from the left. Science ought to be impartial, and I thought that one could get a body of agreement among men of differing politics on the importance of avoiding nuclear war. And I think that in that respect, this document is fairly successful. There are, apart from myself, 8 signatories of this document, and all the 8 are exceedingly eminent in the scientific world, most of them nuclear physicists, some in a field which is very important in this connection, geneticists, and men who know about mutations caused by radiation, a very important subject which arises when you're considering nuclear warfare. But they were chosen solely and only for their scientific eminence and with no other view. I applied to 18, I think, altogether, and of these, half, or nearly half, 8, in fact, agreed. Some I haven't yet heard from for various reasons. In particular, I applied to the most eminent of Chinese physicists, Dr. Li Si Quan, and I haven't yet had his answer. None of the answers that I received were unsympathetic. Those who did not sign had various good reasons, such as that they had official positions or were engaged in some official work, which made it difficult. But nobody, either of the right or of the left, replied in a manner that was unsympathetic. I had one signature from Professor Infeld of the University of Warsaw, who was joint author with Einstein of 2 books. I had not a signature, but a very sympathetic letter from Skobeltsyn of Moscow. Monsieur Joliot-Curie is, well, in the first place, as one can infer from his name, he's the son-in-law of the discoverer of radium. But he doesn't depend on that for his fame. He's a Nobel Prize winner. 6 of the 8 have got the Nobel Prize for work of a scientific character, and the other 2, I think, probably will get the Nobel Prize before very long. That's the order of eminence of these men. Monsieur Joliot-Curie made 2 reservations, which one of which was of some importance, the other not so important. I spoke of the necessity for limitations of sovereignty, and he wants it added that these limitations are to be agreed by all and in the interests of all. And that is a statement that I entirely Then there's another limitation that he made. I say, shall we put an end to the human race, or shall mankind renounce war? And he wants to say, shall mankind renounce war as a means of settling differences between states? With those limitations, he's agreed to sign the document. Professor Muller also made a very small reservation that seemed to me only to be explaining what I had meant. I'll say just a few words about these men, some of whom possibly are not so well known in the journalistic world as they are in the scientific world. They consist of two British scientists, two Americans, Einstein himself, whom I don't reckon among Americans because Einstein's nationality is somewhat universal. One Pole, one Frenchman, and one Japanese. The Professor Rotblat, I'm very happy to have here. He is, as you know, Director of Research in Nuclear Physics in Liverpool. He did a very interesting piece of what you might almost call detective work about the Bikini Bomb. Those of you who are old enough may possibly remember that in 1945 people were quite shocked by the atom bomb. Well, that seems now ancient history, and we think of the atom bomb as something like bows and arrows. We advanced on from that to the H-bomb, which was very much worse than the atom bomb. And then it turned out, first I think through the detective work of Professor Rotblat and afterwards by the admission of the American authorities, that the bomb that was exploded at Bikini was very much worse than an H-bomb. The H-bomb now is ancient history. You have a two-fold trigger arrangement. You have first uranium-235 to set off the hydrogen, then you have the hydrogen to set off uranium-238, of which there are vast slag heaps that have been discarded in producing uranium-235. And now that you can use uranium-238 for the purpose, it's very much cheaper to make these bombs, and they're very much more destructive when they're made. So that you see, science advances quite rapidly. So far, the Bikini bomb is the latest thing, but we can't tell where we're going to come to. I think that this statement, as I conceive it, is only a first step. It will be necessary to go on to get the men of science to make authoritative pronouncements on the facts, and I think that should be followed by an international congress of men of science from all scientific countries, at which the signatories would, I hope, propose some such resolution as I have suggested at the end of this statement. And I think a resolution in somewhat those terms could be suggested at the various partial congresses that take place meanwhile. I think that the men of science should make the public and the governments of the world aware of the facts by means of a widespread popular campaign. You know, it's a very difficult thing to get men of science to embark on popular campaigns. They're not used to that sort of work, and it doesn't come readily to them. But it is their duty, I think, at this time, to make the public aware of things. They have to persuade the world to avoid war. At first, by whatever expedients may suggest themselves, but ultimately by some international machinery that shall make the avoidance of war not a matter of day-to-day expedience, but of world organization. And I think they should emphasize that science, which has come to have a rather sinister meaning in the minds of the general public, I think, that science, if once this question of war were out of the way, is capable of conferring the most enormous benefits upon mankind and of making the world a very much happier place than it has ever been before. I think they should emphasize that as well as the dangers that arise through war. Now, I'm here to answer questions, and I should be very happy to do my best to answer any questions that any of you may wish to ask.
Lord Russell,
yes?
You say that it's imperative almost that politics be kept out of this. But is there not a political question that is bound to arise in the minds of the statesmen? Are they not bound to ask, can you envisage a scheme of disarmament and the wiping out of nuclear weapons which would not deliver the free world into the hands of communists as long as men can still fight with sticks and stones, people will say? Isn't the only answer world government?
Would you like to repeat that?
Is the only answer
yes.
The world government?
Yes. Well, I'm entirely in agreement with you. I don't think prohibiting nuclear weapons in itself is the slightest good. You could prohibit them and have a universal agreement to prohibit them, and they would still be used if ever there was a war. And I don't think there's any point whatever in mere prohibition. The only thing that is any use at all is not to have a war. And as I said, suggested at the tail end of what I was saying, we can avoid war by expedience for the moment, but ultimately we must have some international authority which is able to prevent war. That is the ultimate goal, but it takes some time to reach that goal, I think. But I do say most emphatically that merely to prohibit nuclear weapons won't get you anywhere at all.
Lord Russell, what you said seems to be very much in keeping with pronouncements made by Professor Otto Hahn recently in Germany. Is Professor Otto Hahn amongst those whom you approached, and has he answered or hasn't he answered to your appeal?
The question is there agreement between what I said and what was said by Professor Otto Hahn, and was he one of those whom I approached? He was one of those whom I approached. And he didn't sign this statement because he said he had his own scheme and he was running that. And that was his only reason. He was entirely sympathetic to the point of view.
Lord Russell, as the Russian scientists whom you approached did feel they could not sign your statement because of their official positions, do you think that there is much chance that they can partake in the Congress which you envisage?
The question is, would those who have refused to sign because of an official position, especially I think you said those in Russia, would they be likely to take part in a Congress such as I envisage? And the answer I think certainly is yes, they would. And when I spoke of those who didn't sign because of official positions, it was not in fact scientist in Moscow, Professor Skobyedzin, that I was thinking of. It was men in the West who refused on that ground. His attitude was sympathetic. He had various reasons for not signing, but they were not reasons of lack of sympathy, and I think that indubitably he would be willing and able to attend an international congress.
Sir, do you think you will be able to prevent this appeal of yours from being taken over by propaganda peace movement such as the communist peace movement?
I think so. The question is, Shall I be able to prevent this from being taken over by a propaganda peace movement such as that run by the communists? And I think the answer certainly is yes, most emphatically. It doesn't seem to me that it's in line with the specifically communist propaganda. The specific communist line is, let us prohibit the bomb, and that is not my line. I don't want the bomb used, but I say it will be used if there is a war. And one of the ways of preventing a war is not to prohibit the bomb, but to make it quite clear what would happen if it were used. And that is not the communist line.
Well, Russell, the previous efforts at outlawing war have been notably unsuccessful. I think the Kellogg Pact and so on. Do you believe that still, as we are today, that we will come now have a chance of succeeding at that, of outlawing war? Human beings being what they are.
The question, as I understand it, is this. Previous schemes for outlawing war have all been a failure. And is there any likelihood that any other scheme will succeed, human nature being what it is? Now, I will, of course, admit that human nature is what it is. I think we can try. But I think if it is quite clearly understood by all the great powers that war has no chance of bringing victory to one side or to the other side, or of bringing anything that anybody desires, then I think it will become possible to create machinery for the avoidance of war. Now, I didn't want to go into all these distant questions, which are still a little utopian, but of course I think it's quite clear that the only way you can ultimately prevent war is to have only one army, navy, and air force in the world, that being commanded by an international authority and being irresistible. That, I think, is the only ultimate way to prevent war, but that's a rather distant prospect.
Well, Russell, doesn't that just mean that you just have civil wars instead?
Well, I don't quite see how you're going to have civil wars in a state of that sort. How can you have civil wars if you have only one army, navy, and air force? And, mind you, that will not have to be composed of national contingents contributed by the different nations. Then you might get a civil war. But you will have to have in each unit a mixture of people of a number of different countries, so that there will be no unit that will have a special national loyalty. And the opportunity for civil war, therefore, will hardly arrive.
Lord Russell, your personal experience came to a letter to heads of state. Has this letter in fact been sent out to heads of state? And if so, to which states are they?
This letter has been sent out to those heads of states, to the heads of those states that possess or are about to possess nuclear weapons, and also to China. It seemed that those who haven't yet got nuclear weapons were not so important in this matter, though of course now that nuclear weapons are much cheaper than they were, very soon everybody will have them.
When you say to those countries which are going to get civil nuclear weapons, who do you mean, and why will certain countries be getting nuclear weapons soon?
Well, our own country is one of those. I don't suppose we yet have very much in the way of nuclear weapons, but we mean to have. And certain countries obviously are in the running for a nuclear war, and others are not.
Could you list those states, sir? Could you list the states?
List those? Well, let me see. There's the United States and Russia and England. China was included. I think Canada, but I'm not quite sure about that.
Lord Russell, I don't see Professor Julio Curie's name on the...
No.
Is that because of his reservation or because he signed later than it was finished?
Because he came in too late. I only got his adhesion at... 1 o'clock the night before last, and it was too late to be included in this. He didn't know whether his reservations would be fatal or not, and I had a discussion with a friend of his lasting late into the night, as a result of which, with those two reservations, he agreed to sign. That was why his name is not here.
Sir, could we have the spelling of the Chinese and Soviet professors whom you wrote?
I beg your pardon?
How do you spell the names?
Don't let me do it out of my head, because I might get it wrong. It's S-K-O-B-E-L-T-Z-Y-N.
What?
Oh, the Chinese you want to, yes. Well, he is spelled L-I, and then S-Z-E, and then K-U-A-N-G.
When you mention China, do you think that China will have, that's kind of Chinese, yeah, an atomic bomb or a hydrogen bomb or a nuclear bomb within the immediate future?
I don't know about the immediate future. I'm not in their confidence, and I can't tell you. But it's quite clear they will have, sooner or later. I mean, it's quite clear, I think, that China is in the running for being as powerful as anybody at all, only not quite at once. I can't hear. Well, I gave you the whole of his name. That is the whole of his name.
The Chinese.
You know Skobelev's initials?
Academician Skobelev's initials.
Yes. I don't know what his Christian name is. Well, I shouldn't say Christian name. I don't know what his first name is.
Lord Russell.
Yeah?
Can you say, is your group proposing to urge that no further H-bomb experiments be carried out? I don't see anything in the statement about that, because of the fallout that they
made. Well, the group as such doesn't make any proposals, and I thought it was undesirable that they should, because I thought that was outside the special competence of Venezuela. All I wanted them to do was to state what is likely to happen if it is done. Then it's up to other people to say whether they would rather live or die. That's up to them.
Could you say one first step to the Haitian government, like that is in?
Would you repeat that?
Could you suggest one first step to
I can't hear.
What should be the first step which the head of government can take in Geneva?
Oh, well, I think in Geneva they can only make a beginning. I mean, before you can get anywhere, you've got to have what you might call a peaceful atmosphere. That is to say, an atmosphere where people find that there is an area of agreement and not merely areas of disagreement, and that the points as to which cooperation is possible are perhaps more important than the points of disagreement. You've got to create a friendly atmosphere before you can get anywhere, and that, I think, is the best you can hope from Geneva. If that happens, it will have served its purpose. But I don't think you can expect actual concrete measures here and now at once. That'll take some time, I think, to work out.
I understand that your letter was sent to the Helsinki conference. Was the fact that Professor Roger Curie went to Helsinki one of the reasons why he did not send your letter? And what was the result of your letter at Helsinki?